Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. The Washington Report.
Money FM 89.3. It is the evening runway. I'm Elliot Danker. Let's turn our attention to headlines from the United States. We are going to talk about how U.S. House lawmakers last week approved legislation meant to force ByteDance, which of course is a Chinese internet company, to sell its widely popular social media app, TikTok. I'm sure you saw this in the news, right? So the vote was the latest development in a years-long cold war between the United States and China over who controls valuable technology from computer chips to artificial intelligence. Now, the White House has expressed concerns that TikTok's Chinese ownership poses a national security risk because Beijing could use the app to gain access to data from Americans or perhaps run some kind of a disinformation campaign. So what will happen to TikTok if the United States bans the app? On the line with me is Pushan Dhoot, professor of economics at INSEAD. Professor, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good.
All right, Prof. Quite an interesting situation. TikTok finding itself in this precarious position. Lawmakers in Washington moving forward with that bill. The House of Representatives, March 13, passing legislation that would ban TikTok if the China-based owner ByteDance doesn't sell its stakes. It's been quite the headliner. Professor, what you're observing as far as the developments of this goes?
So I think it's early days yet. Yes, the House has passed a bill, but it has gone to the Senate, and the Senate has actually slowed down the pace, not surprisingly, because TikTok is wildly popular, especially with the Gen Z crowd, and used by 100 million users. So in the Senate, if it goes through, it will have to overcome a filibuster, then the bill has to be reconciled between the House and the Senate, and finally Biden has to sign it. But the big thing that will happen immediately is that it will be challenged on free speech grounds, on the First Amendment grounds in federal courts, and ultimately the Supreme Court will have to step in. If we just look historically, Trump had actually tried to ban TikTok using national emergency powers, but this ban was overturned by the courts. Now, the courts did not rule on the free speech issue. They just said that Trump had sort of overreached and they actually overturned the ban. So we still have, you know, at least more than a year before this thing gets sorted out.
Quite interesting that it's an election year as well. I know you mentioned one of the candidates for this. U.S. social media platforms banned in China. Why allow a Chinese company to have a large influence in the United States? Now, the president, Joe Biden, says he's in favor of signing the TikTok ban. So as far as the election campaign is concerned, I guess all the comms people and campaign managers will have to start thinking tactics right about now.
Yeah, I still think that they will be using TikTok so to reach out to the younger voters. So the tale of TikTok and this bill is a tale of double standards, right? So China has banned almost every U.S.-based app, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody goes around asking them, why don't you let Facebook and YouTube inside China? Biden has said that he will sign the bill, but he's simultaneously courting influencers on TikTok and putting videos out there. So here's the conundrum that the politicians are facing. The app is very popular. Banning it is dangerous because it will be opposed by younger voters. But not banning it opens them up to accusation that they're not standing up to China, because the only thing that they agree on is that China is the big bad. So the reason why you see now both Democrats and Republicans united is because they're sort of holding hands and jumping together, because it's too risky to be out there on your own. They think that's the only way they can manage the electoral risks, by just sticking together on this issue. Of course, Trump has said that he's going to not go forth with this ban.
Mm. Professor, in January, there was a report that I've just found on Yahoo Finance. I believe this is based on research and markets.com, talking about the digital content creation market size expected to grow from $27 billion from last year to 13.3%, forecast the period last year to the year 2030. Professor, your thoughts then, considering that a lot of content creators are in the Gen Z category and TikTok's got, what, $16 billion in sales in the United States? This doesn't sound like a good business move.
So we have to then think of what would happen if TikTok is actually forced to sell its U.S. operations, right? Who does it sell it to? And then what happens to like a future U.S.-based TikTok? I don't think TikTok is going away. The big question is that either will it be replaced by somebody in U.S. holding it, so it's hived off by ByteDance, And in the extreme scenario where TikTok actually gets banned, you know, I'm pretty sure that all these influencers and content creators will simply jump onto Instagram, YouTube. There are still dozens of sites out there. Many of them are pale copies of TikTok, but they will still have a venue. Yes, in all of these social media platforms, there's a network effect. So initially, they will lose all their followers. But then again, I think these followers, they will make it up again in an alternate social media platform.
And here comes the fun part, Professor. Let's look at the other side of the business, the likes of Meta. Perhaps they can go on the aggressive here. Google, YouTube, they could all benefit if, let's say, this ban comes to light.
Yeah, so I think who will buy TikTok is the multi-billion dollar question. So very early under the Trump administration, Trump was actually planning to sell it to Microsoft. So today we see Oracle shares going up because they are a candidate. It's, you know, again, ByteDance hives off the U.S. operations. So the big competitors, of course, as you said, are Facebook and Google via YouTube. But I don't see any scenario where the competition authority in the U.S. will allow one of the existing social media giants to buy TikTok. Mm. So Lina Khan, who's the person who's heading up the competition authority under the Biden administration, she's actually on a warpath against big tech. So they are most likely going to entertain offers either from an Oracle, which has no social media platforms, or something entirely new, like we just saw Steve Mnuchin, the ex-Treasury Secretary under Trump, who's trying to get some money for a buyout.
Right. All right. Thank you very much for your insight there, Professor. Let's talk about the other issue. Red, blue, and gray. U.S. President Joe Biden, his predecessor Donald Trump, have both passed the delegate thresholds to clinch their party's nominations. Now, they each won several states in primary elections last week, propelling them over the finish line. But the two 2020 contenders are providing this rematch, I think, is what, the first time in 70 years. Polling suggests that it could be a tight race when it comes down to the narrow margins in a few key states. This is a long anticipated rematch, but you've got people saying, and like I mentioned, red, blue, and gray, they're quite old as presidential candidates. Well, what is your take in this? How unique do you think this will be as far as a rematch goes?
So I think this is definitely very unique. Now, you know, a ton of ink has been spilled on how old they are, that one is physically fragile and one is mentally not together. But I think the thing that I really focus on is that for the first time, we have two candidates who are more or less incumbents, right?
Okay.
So because they've both been presidents. Now, Americans even today have a hard time believing that this is actually happening. So if you look at focus groups, many voters believe that, you know, that this will actually not be the matchup. And reality is slowly catching up to them. So even today, there's a hankering after some unity ticket which will emerge, or Biden will step down in favor of a younger candidate. So I think this is completely delusional. Mm. There is no alternate candidate. It is going to be Biden versus Trump. And another reason that this is unique is that I think the stakes are impossibly high. It's not hyperbole to say that, you know, U.S. democracy might be at stake, the international world order, the trading order might be at stake. Trump himself has said multiple times that when he comes into power, he's going to be dictator for a day. Mm. Unfortunately, you know, it might not just be one day. He might just get to like it. And then, you know, he might just persist in with his dictatorial tendencies.
Yeah. You know, it's also interesting, Professor. I remember about 4 years ago when the showdown was gathering pace, right? A lot of industry watchers and observers were saying boring is good. And therefore, a lot were hoping for President Biden to win, which he did. 4 years on, Professor, what does the Trump-Biden showdown mean for the rest of the world?
So I think the rest of the world so far has had two reactions. Okay, one is either they are in a state of disbelief that Trump could actually win.
Yeah.
The second reaction is that actually nothing will change fundamentally. I think they are wrong on both counts. So unlike 2020, where Biden consistently led Trump in the opinion polls, this is not true this time. Trump is actually leading Biden. And the closer we come to the elections, the more informative these opinion polls are. Second, Trump in his first term was restrained by the establishment. There were some grown-ups in the room. This time, I don't think there will be grown-ups in the room. So if I were NATO, I would worry whether NATO would survive. He has actually, in his last term, Trump did say that, you know, he would get, he would meddle with the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve usually is independent of politicians. Russia could get a green light about, you know, invading Baltic states. War with Iran was something that he has always hankered about. So again, not hyperbole. You can hear it in his speeches. So people used to say things like, should we take Trump seriously or should we take him literally? I think the iron rule is you should take Trump both literally and seriously. So the world has to realize that the stakes are actually very, very high.
All right. Final issue, Professor. U.S. President Joe Biden plans to express concern over Nippon Steel's proposed $14.9 billion purchase of U.S. Steel. This pushes the U.S. company's stock nearly 13% lower on bets that the deal could face greater political opposition. Now, in December, Nippon Steel clinched a deal to buy the 122-year-old iconic U.S. steelmaker for a hefty premium, betting that the U.S. Steel would benefit from the spending and tax incentives, of course, from Mr. Biden's infrastructure deal. I guess I would like to get your opinion, Professor, on some of the potential concerns with regard to this. Your thoughts on how great a political opposition it could face.
So this is a fascinating case where you see actually domestic politics and geopolitics clashing. So Japan and U.S. are geopolitical allies, but I think here we see domestic politics dominating. Now, why is that? It's because United States has a steelworker union, and the company is based in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Minnesota, and these are key battleground states. Now, Biden has been losing ground amongst working-class voters, so he has been courting union voters in these swing states.
Yeah.
So as a result, he's opposed to you know, the buyout plan by Nippon Steel. Now, in the past, Trump actually slapped import tariffs on steel, and he also said that he would block the deal, which means that both the Democrats and the Republicans, at least their presidential candidates, are unified on this issue. So I think from Japan's perspective, you know, they should put some quiet pressure. But I predict that push comes to shove, Japan, because it needs the U.S. security umbrella, they will acquiesce. They will, you know, they will actually have to just go along with the U.S. political realities on the ground.
But there is a summit on the 10th of April between President Biden and Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. The idea behind this summit is to boost long-standing security alliance between both countries. Of course, this is in the face of growing Chinese strength. Could this issue overshadow that summit?
So my prediction will be that even if they discuss this at the summit, they will do it very quietly and on the sidelines. So we should not expect a strong stance taken by either of them publicly. The best the Japanese can do, and they are making this case, that A, the acquisition will lead to more investment and more jobs in the U.S., and B, most importantly, it will make U.S. supply chains more resilient. So defense expenditures are rising worldwide, and steel is an important and necessary input. So the Japanese will actually play up the geopolitical aspect that this will make the U.S. supply chains more resilient, whereas Biden will be constrained by the domestic politics. And again, I think the domestic politic aspect is going to win. The best the Japanese can hope for is nothing happens till about January, and then, you know, Biden actually changes his mind, because then he'll be in his last term.
All right. I've been speaking with Pushan Dutt, who's professor of economics at INSEAD. Professor, as always, appreciate your time. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio, at the App Store and Google Play.